Welcome to the Father's Day. I am Jesse Lee Peterson. Due to the Chinese virus, we're still stuck in my radio studio instead of the TV studio. So that will change soon, I hope. Don't forget to hit the like button and the notification bell. I have with me an interesting guest. I was preparing for this show last night, looking at some of the videos. I'm like, wow, this is very interesting. I have with me Dr. Michael Shermer, Presidential Fellow at Chapman University and the publisher of Skeptic Magazine. He has a brand new book called Giving the Devil His Due.
There it is.
There it is.
There you go.
I can't wait to find out more about this book. Thank you so much for coming on.
You're welcome, and thanks for having me. I appreciate that.
Yes. You know, I saw a tweet, I believe, that you tweeted that you you tried the drug for preventing the Chinese virus. What drug was that?
Oh, yeah, that's the hydroxychloroquine. It's a fairly standard malaria drug that people have been taking since the 40s. But apparently there's some anecdotal evidence that it might be a prophylactic against the coronavirus and or perhaps a treatment for it. Not a cure, but a treatment to lessen the symptoms. We don't have the gold standard clinical randomized clinical controlled trials, but there's enough evidence that my doc told me. My doc also happens to be a good friend of mine and one of my cycling buddies, and he's like, "Hey, I'm taking this stuff just in case because, you know, I work at a big hospital and you might want to try it." So he wrote me a script and I tried it for 2 days. You know, I feel fine. I don't have it. So I was just trying it and I didn't like the way it made me feel. It's pretty toxic stuff. My wife said she could smell it coming out of my sweat when I went on a bike ride. Yeah. So that's not good. And I could tell in my body, I'm pretty sensitive because I work out every day, you know, the kinds of foods I eat and meds I take, you know, and I thought, you know what, I'm just going to hang on to the bottle of pills. If I get coronavirus, I'll slam these down and see if that helps. But until then I'm going to wait. So, you know, and, you know, Trump's been getting hammered for promoting it. But what if it turns out it works?
I know.
Then, you know, then if he hadn't done that, he'd be criticized for that. You know, this whole thing has become so polarizing. You know, my book is really quite fair to both left and right. I'm critical of both. I praise both left and right. You know, I think now is a good time not to be so polarizing.
I agree. Absolutely. And because of it, I'm not sure how serious this thing is. I know it's happening, but I'm not sure how serious it is, because if they would leave out politics and just focus on that for now, we can understand the depths of it. But you can't trust the media and others because they have brought politics into it.
Some media have, not all, but most. Yes, it's disturbing. Trump's being accused of not shutting things down soon enough. But back before we knew what we know now, when he was trying to make that decision and decided to not shut down for a little bit longer, you know, there were articles about how a lot of autocrats and strongmen around the world, like in Turkey and Hungary, of course, North Korea, China, Russia, were using the coronavirus pandemic spread as an excuse to grow their power, grab more power, rid of civil liberties and so on. So had Trump closed things down earlier, of course, he would have been accused of being a strongman autocrat trying to grab dictatorial powers. And now, of course, he didn't do that. And so he's being criticized for not doing it. I don't know why anybody would want that job. I mean, everybody hates you no matter what you do.
I know.
So it's rough. But I want to encourage your listeners to do follow Fauci. He's pretty reliable. He's pretty good. And, you know, again, today he's getting hammered for lowering the number from possibly 200,000 dead to 60,000 dead.
Right.
And he's accused of, you know, kind of stirring up fear mongering. But had he not done that, had he said, "Oh, I think it's only 60,000 and 200,000 end up dying," then he'd be criticized for that.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, like after 9/11, everybody got behind George Bush and said, "All right, we're going to support our president." You know, of course, liberals didn't like Bush, but they said, "Okay, we're going to support him for a few months. You know, let's unite the country." And I think it'd be good if we all did that. I know a lot of people hate Trump. I know it's hard to do. But, you know, I think really this is not just a national crisis. It's a global crisis. Yeah. So now is a good time to, you know, rally the troops in support.
Well, they've been hating the Great White Hope since day one. He's damn if you do, if you damn if you don't. Whatever he likes, they hate it. Even if it's right, they still go against it. But I like that. And the reason I like it, because it shows the depths of the president. He put the country first. He's working hard to keep his word during that he made promises that he made during the campaign. He fight against all odds, and he is the great white hope. I just love the man. I love the fact that he's putting the country first, and that even when these people go after him, he doesn't flinch. He still do what he has to do. He doesn't care if you're black or white, male or female, Mexican or Japanese. If you're wrong, he'll speak up about it. He's not a beta male. He's an alpha male.
Why is this a global competition to you if every day Americans are still losing their lives and we're still seeing more cases every day?
Well, they're losing their lives everywhere in the world. And maybe that's a question you should ask China. Don't ask me. Ask China that question, okay? When you ask them that question, you may get a very unusual answer. Yes, behind you, please.
What, sir, why are you saying that to me specifically?
I'm telling you. I'm not saying it specifically to anybody. I'm saying it to anybody that would ask a nasty question
that's
like that.
That's not a nasty question.
Please go ahead.
Why does it matter?
Okay. Anybody else? Please, go ahead in the back.
that's very true. Although I would point out that that Obama got hammered by conservatives, and George Bush Jr. W got hammered by liberals, Clinton back in the 90s. You know, the conservatives hated him. You know, this is pretty much par for the course. And you know, people criticize Trump for how he treats the media. But, you know, I'm old enough to remember Nixon. He hated the media. He thought the media was all run by Jews. And, you know, he was pretty anti-Semitic. And, you know, he said he didn't like giving press conferences. And he was pretty nasty. You know, I think it just kind of goes with the job.
It does. It does. Yeah. I want to ask about your book. And then there's so many other things I want to get into. Your brand new book, Give Me the Devil His Due. What do you mean by that?
Well, the devil is anyone who disagrees with you or with whom you disagree. So, for example, what we've just been talking, if you're a liberal and you hate Trump, well, yeah, but we got to give him his due. Well, even if you can't stand him, why? Well, because for my own safety's sake. That is to say, if I decide I think it's okay to censor people, to silence people, to cancel people, you know, even in other countries, to jail dissenters. Like I was just watching this documentary on China last night. You know, they're running a police state there that's as bad as East Germany in the Cold War, as bad as Stalinist Russia. You know, they have millions and millions of people locked up that are just political dissenters, right? The moment you go down that road, even if you think it's right, like those are really bad, dangerous people, we need to silence them or lock them up. What are you going to do when you're one of the dissenters, when you're not happy with the current administration, you want to protest and they lock you up because the laws are in place that you supported, all right?
Yeah.
So we got to err on the side of freedom and liberty, free speech, free thought. You know, freedom of religion, freedom of protest, and so on. We have to do that for our own safety's sake. So that's the devil. Giving the devil his due is that we listen to people, listen to the people on the other side, and give them the benefit of the doubt that maybe they have something constructive to say. And maybe they're wrong. You know, the other person you're debating with, maybe they're 100% wrong. But by listening, you strengthen your own position. You improve your own arguments. And like I tell most of my liberal students at Chapman University who are mostly pro-choice, you know, can you articulate the pro-life position?
Right.
Most of them can't.
Yeah.
You know, they go, well, you know, they just hate women. No, no, that is not the arguments that they make. You know, so I encourage them to steel man the other side's argument, not straw man it where you knock down the straw man that they didn't believe in the first place, but steel man the argument, articulate their position so clearly that they'd go, yes, that's what I believe.
I noticed, though, with the fallen messiah, Barack Obama, the conservative did not hate him. They disagreed because he was a socialist, and he was anti-America, anti-Christian, Christianity, anti-Judaism.
I would disagree with that. Yeah, so, I would disagree with that.
He was very weak. He was very weak. The first thing he did was to go around the world apologizing for the greatness of America. So they recognized right away that he was a socialist. So they didn't want it. But with the great white hope, President Donald Trump, they hate him because he's a straight, conservative, white male, a Christian white male of power. And that's the last thing they want in America today.
Well, Obama is a Christian. And
I doubt that.
And an American. And you doubt that?
Yes.
You do?
Obama hates Christians.
Oh, no, I don't. I have to disagree with
he
that.
He seemed to go more with the Allahu Akbar people. I noticed that he stood up for them and didn't stand for Christians.
I would say that's not true. Look what he did with the military and drone attacks on Islamic terrorists. He was as aggressive, if not more aggressive, than George W. Bush in orchestrating the war in Iraq, especially the war on terror. You know, with the WikiLeaks, we now know that, when Obama was elected, he said he's going to be the president of transparency and we're going to get rid of the surveillance state. He didn't do that. He ramped up the surveillance state that George W. Bush started. So I have to say, I think Obama is a continuation.
In the middle of a devastating pandemic and a terrible recession, a disease like this just spotlights the underlying inequalities and extra burdens that Black communities have historically had to deal with in this country. We see it in the disproportionate impact of COVID-19 on our communities, just as we see it when a Black man goes for a jog and some folks feel like they can stop and question and shoot him if he doesn't submit to their questioning. With everything suddenly feeling like it's up for grabs, this is your time to seize the initiative. Meaningful change requires allies in common cause. As African Americans, we are particularly attuned to injustice, inequality, and struggle, but that also should make us more alive to the experiences of others who've been left out and discriminated against, whether it's immigrants, refugees, the rural poor, the LGBT community.
Let me ask you something, Jesse. I didn't know about your show, but so you're talking about the Great White Hope, but you're a Black guy.
As Black as the ace of space.
So square that circle.
I grew up on a plantation down in Alabama, right outside of Montgomery, Alabama. I grew up under the Jim Crow laws. And during that time, Black Americans didn't hate. You know, they didn't hate the white people. They were not blaming white folks. You had Black families together, both parents together, grandparents, and they taught you to work. And even though we were working on a plantation, we were taught to work and respect one another, treat people the way we would like to be treated. And that during that Jim Crow law thing, it was from the Democratic Party, established by the Democrat, and all white people were not in favor of the Jim Crow law. And so all white people were not evil, and that was good or bad at all races. So I didn't grow up hating anyone. I grew up seeing people as they are. But when the Civil Rights Movement started, which should have never happened, they turned Blacks away from God, away from family, away from the country, and they started using Black people for their own personal gain. And it's just been downhill for Black people. So I'm about the person, not the color.
Oh, me too. Absolutely. Dr. King's dream of judging people by the content or the character, not the color of their skin.
They took his dream and turned it into a nightmare.
I would point out Dr. King was a Christian.
Yeah, he was a real one.
Baptist minister, yeah. And Malcolm X was, of the Nation of Islam until the end. So it's not like the Civil Rights Movement was not a religious movement. It very much was, at least in part, motivated by religious morals about the equal treatment of people.
But it turned to be fate, though. Only Dr. King was a real Christian. The rest of those so-called civil rights leaders was children of the lie, meaning that they were children of the devil.
I don't know what that means. What does that mean?
Children of the devil?
Yeah.
Satan is their daddy, not God.
Oh, well, I don't believe
all
in Satan.
All in the name of Jesus.
Okay.
Did you write a book on free speech?
Yeah, so this is giving the devil his due is my defense of free speech, free thought, heterodox thinking out of the box. You know, we have to listen to what other people say, because much of the time we're wrong about a lot of the things we believe, and the only way to correct the course that you might be going down the wrong course is to listen to other people. And we've gone the opposite way. Now here's something that's been bothering me is that defense of free speech used to be a liberal cause. People on the left champion free speech and free thought, going back into the 1960s and the free speech movement on college campuses like UC Berkeley and so on. Now liberals are trying to censor people, particularly in college campuses, and it's conservatives that are defending free speech. And I'm like, what the heck happened here?
What the? Would you? Why did you say as a black man? Why am I speaking this way?
I'm just curious because I've always thought of Barack Obama being elected president twice was a sign of moral progress. Like, okay, things aren't perfect for African Americans here, but the fact that we elected a black guy president twice is surely a sign that some of the prejudices have attenuated a fair amount.
Oh, I see. No, when things got worse under Barack Obama, because he's such an evil man, and he promoted people like Black Lives Matter, a far less liberal, radical, agitated group that support.
Well, some of them were radical, but
yeah. What did we want? Kill cops. When did we want it? Now dead cops. When we want it now?
Yeah,
and Obama invited them to the White House after that.
Some of that happened, but not them. I mean, as a black guy, don't you think Black Lives Matter too?
I don't think that Black Lives Matter at all. I think lives.
I mean, all lives matter.
All matter. And yeah. Not just because black people, if you know, they don't care about their own lives. They're fat, high blood pressure, they are angry, having their babies out of wedlock. Black women and black men don't respect one another. They hate all white people and they hate the Mexicans. They love being on welfare, affirmative actions. Reparations.
Okay.
They have no moral character.
Those are sort of Fox News talking points. I think that's
No. Those are Jesse Peterson talking points.
Okay, Jesse Peterson. Okay, fine. I would say that's a generalization that doesn't apply to many, if not most, African Americans.
Oh no, that's not true. I know my flowers, but I know black people.
Well, you probably know black people better than I, and you live in L.A. I used to live in Altadena for 25 years, and that's a racially mixed community.
Yeah.
Pretty much every black person I ever saw there went off to work every day. They had, wives and kids and spouses and children, families. They, went to good schools. They went to church. You know, not at all like, that sort of stereotype of the welfare queen living off the dole as a, single mother, it refuses to get married because they're getting a paycheck and so on. Yes, that happens.
77% of black babies born out of wedlock.
There's poor white trash, poor white trash that does that sort of thing too, that capitalizes on the welfare state. So I think it would be a little unfair to characterize, certainly unfair, that
what
most African-Americans are like that.
What was the year that you lived in Altadena?
Oh, I just moved from there 3 years ago. And so I lived in Altadena from 1989 through 2017.
Well, those days are behind us now.
I don't know. My office is in Altadena. I go there. We're surrounded by black people.
I believe 70% between 70 and 77% of black babies born out of wedlock. That was unheard of when I was growing up. It was a shame.
Yeah, I know Larry Elder. You probably know Larry
very
Elder.
Very well, yes.
And, I consider him a friend and colleague. And he's got the numbers on that. And I've checked his numbers. They seem solid.
Yeah.
About the percentage of children born out of wedlock and the lack of family structure and marriage and so on in the African-American community. Yes, I would agree that's a good thing. But let's not stereotype too much where we say, well, if you're black and single and you have children, you cannot raise a solid family. Well, yes, you can.
A woman cannot raise a solid family and not be married.
Yeah.
No.
It can be.
Look at when I was growing up.
Okay, you're talking about on average. I would agree. On average, it's better to have two parents than one. But let's not then generalize and say, if you in particular, I meet you and I see you're single with a kid, I should not be assuming you're a bad parent or that your children are going to be rotten because of that.
Well, it's easier for a single male, single father to raise children than it is for a single mother.
Because of income differences?
Because of the authority. The real love is in the father, not in the woman. The love comes through the...
What do you mean?
The love comes through the father, through the woman, to the children, from God, through Christ, through the man, through the woman, to the children.
Oh, boy. Oh,
Other than that, if the woman doesn't have a man, then she has no love.
I can't go down that road with you on that. No, I think women love their children just as much as men. There's no
they don't have love.
Hierarchical authority there.
They don't have it.
Well, first of all, I'm an atheist. I don't think there's any God sending authoritarian messages down.
I want to get to that because you said some interesting things in one of your videos that made me think about things.
Okay.
So you are an atheist. What does it mean to be an atheist?
I don't believe in God. That's it. I don't know there's no God, but I don't believe that there, I don't believe that in God.
Oh, so you believe there might be one, but you just don't believe in
it. Yep, there might be. There might be. Yeah.
And so you're famous. You're known as an atheist around, I guess around the world, if not the country for sure, but around the world.
The entire solar system.
Yeah. Were you raised a Christian?
No, I wasn't raised anything. I became a born-again Christian in 1971 when I was in high school. And I went to Crescenta Valley High in La Crescenta, and I was matriculated at Pepperdine University in Malibu, which is a Church of Christ school. I went there. Then I went off to graduate school. So I was born again for about 7 years. But I was serious about it. I mean, I was studying the Bible. I took courses at Pepperdine in the life of Jesus, the writings of C.S. Lewis. I read everything C.S. Lewis has written. I took courses on the Old Testament, the New Testament. These are required courses at Pepperdine. And I went knocking on door to door to witness to people. So I was, you know, a serious evangelical. And then, you know, eventually I lost my religion. But,
what happened? What happened to cause you to lose it?
Yeah, that's the big question. Well, first of all, I was very troubled by the problem of evil, what's called theodicy. That is, why do bad things happen to good people? Now, here I don't mean wars and things like that. I mean like childhood leukemia. Why would innocent children be, you know, felled by cancer, by, you know, hurricanes and tsunamis? And, you know, why would God allow that? Well, maybe he can't. Maybe he's just not omniscient. But if he is omniscient and he's omnipotent and he's all good and loving, then why does he allow these things to happen? Anyway, this is a huge debate, philosophy. I've read, you know, both sides. In my opinion, there's no good answer other than, well, there's no God and just stuff happens. You know, bad things happen and there is no God to stop it or make it. God doesn't make it happen. God doesn't let it happen. There is no God. Things just happen. This is just the laws of nature taking their course. And, you know, that was kind of the biggest impetus, I would say. You know,
were your father and mother Christians?
No, they slight leanings for that, but they weren't religious. No.
And so who are you closest to, your father or your mother?
But they weren't anti-religious either. See, back in, you know, the 60s and 70s when I was coming of age, this whole thing about the importance of religion culturally, politically, and so on, that didn't exist. There was no atheist movement. There was no clash between science and religion. You know, it just wasn't really an issue.
Right.
It certainly wasn't in our home.
Yeah.
Well, I was raised in two different homes. My parents divorced when I was four, both remarried, both wonderful people. My step parents were very loving and supportive. So I bounced back and forth between two homes. And here I will agree that I would have preferred, I think looking back as a child, to have one home, just one set of parents. It was somewhat anxiety producing to bounce back and forth between two homes. But given that it happened, I think both parents made the most of it. And I have step parents and I have two half sisters and three step siblings, and they're all wonderful people and everything's fine. But you know, I agree, you know, the family structure is good.
Think that, who are you closest to, your father, your mother, doing the bouncing and back, going back and forth?
My mother.
Yeah. Do you think that it's possible that not being close to your father could have affected the way you saw Christianity?
No, I was pretty close to my father, my bio father, and my step-parents.
But you were closer
too.
To your mother, though.
Well, I mean, if you're giving me a forced choice, yes. But that, you know, they're both super high. One's just maybe like that different. Right? No, that had nothing to do with my giving up Christianity. I think the arguments for God's existence are not as good as the counter arguments. They're good. They're good, but they're not as good. I think science has a lot of answers to great mysteries, but not all. I don't think invoking God for the creation of the universe or why there's something rather than nothing or the origins of morality or consciousness, I don't think that's necessary. We have some pretty good explanations now. I've written books about all these things.
Yeah,
so it's not a super simple answer, but it's okay to say, I don't know. I mean, nobody may know what there was before the universe began or whether there's a God. If God is outside of space and time, how can we know God?
Amazing.
Unless God reaches into the universe and stirs the particles in some way to cure cancer or whatever, in some measurable way, there's no way science can determine one way or the other whether God's existence.
When you were a Christian and you were going around preaching the Christian message, did you have perfect peace?
Yes, I felt pretty at peace with myself and my religious beliefs, yes.
Did you have perfect peace within?
well, I don't know what perfect peace means. You know, when I was a Christian, particularly at Pepperdine, and you're surrounded by other Christians, you know, the worldview is fairly coherent, internally coherent and logical. And it, you know, everything happens for a reason. Everything makes sense, you know, until you step outside of the bubble and you think, you know, there's another perspective here. You know, being in the bubble is has a one set of beliefs. Being outside of it, you see a different perspective, which is why I argue in Giving the Devil His Due, you need to talk to other people. Like you're talking to me. You're obviously a Christian and a believer, and I'm an atheist, and we're talking. So that's good.
Yeah. And so did you have perfect peace when you were a Christian?
Well, what do you mean by that?
I'll tell you in a minute. And if you had it, you would know. Did you have perfect peace within?
I certainly believed. I certainly believed, and I felt, I guess I would say I was at peace with myself, yes.
But did you have perfect peace within?
I don't know what that means.
Oh, okay. Another thing you just said, which is very interesting, and I hear this a lot, you said, why would God allow bad things to happen to good people, right?
Yeah.
How do you know those people are good?
Well, I mean, just take innocent people, like a 5-year-old girl who dies of childhood leukemia. You know,
how do you know that she was innocent, though?
It doesn't matter if she was good or bad. She's a child. Why would God allow the
suffering? Why
would
you call them innocent? I mean, innocent people.
What I mean by innocent is that—
I mean, good people.
I mean, Christians distinguish between natural evil and then human-caused evil. So I could sort of follow the line of reasoning that bad things happen to good people because there's bad people. Psychopaths or dictators or demagogues that commit genocide on people. So yes, okay, that's human volition doing that.
Right.
But what about natural evil? You know, earthquakes, tsunamis, hurricanes, and entire towns are wiped out. Families are killed. I mean, are you seriously gonna argue that they all died because they were bad people?
I would neither call them good or evil because I didn't know them, so I couldn't make the decision that they were good and evil. I do know that in life we get what we deserve.
I don't think that's always the case. It's kind of a built-in assumption you're making that's unfalsifiable. There's no way to counter it. That is to say, you're arguing whatever happens was supposed to happen. Okay, that doesn't explain anything. So you're saying whoever died probably had to die because they were bad people.
Well, I don't call them good or bad because I didn't know them. I don't know them. So I wouldn't make up an assumption about something I don't know. It's a situation that happened. Those who were killed or whatever. But I wouldn't classify them as bad or good. I would recognize that the incident happened. And I'm trying to figure out, why would you call them good people?
Well, this is a phrase in a book title by Rabbi Gerald Kushner called When Bad Things Happen to Good People. Now, he's a Jew, and his ultimate conclusion is because God simply cannot stop all evil. Now, by evil, he means, again, to distinguish between natural evil and human-caused evil. But what would be your explanation for why children die at a rate— I think it's like 3,000 a day of childhood diseases and starvation in poor countries like Africa, various, causes like this. This is like a 9/11 every day. And then multiply that by the grief that their parents feel about losing a child. I mean, I have two children. I can't imagine how horrible that must be to lose a child. And this happens 3,000 times every day. Surely God could do something about this, but he doesn't. Why not?
Well, God can do, he's in all things, he can control all things, he can definitely do what he wants, but
why doesn't he want to help poor children? Why doesn't he want to save the lives of children?
Because he has given that responsibility unto men to do that, to represent good, to allow him to represent good, but men, some men, not all, but most have decided not to overcome that fallen state. And they are representing evil, and the sins of the father, the sins of the fathers are passed on to the children.
I couldn't figure out the name of your show. By fallen state, you don't mean the government. You mean the fall of mankind in the Garden of Eden.
Yes.
Okay, I see.
Things like that happen because if the earthly father not going to protect and be that example and be the light to their family, they'll put their children at risk with those type of things. And so when you're living in the darkness, you're going to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, and things will happen to you.
I don't know. It's a little too convenient. I mean, would you say that to parents who had a child die and they're grieving, they're in misery, and you would say to them, what? Hey, tough up. That's the way God wanted it. Or you were bad and you sinned, and that's why God took your child away?
But
I mean, you wouldn't say that.
But it's not. God doesn't take them away. It's your own failure that takes. It's the God that you serve that takes them away. God doesn't take life away like that.
If I'm a failure, let's say I'm a terrible parent, why would God kill my own kid or allow nature to, say, give my kid cancer? That's sort of the sins of the father are loaded onto the shoulders of the child. That's wrong.
But you got it wrong when you say that God is doing it. He's allowed it to happen, but he doesn't do it. It's a sin. It's a falling away from God that brings these things up on you and your family.
But let's say
you serve a different God, and there's no love in him at all.
Let's say you're born in some African country that's super poor, you know, disease ridden, and you know they're food deserts, and the children are just miserable and suffering. They're not Christians. They never even heard of Jesus. Why should they suffer?
Well, the reason that they're suffering is because they do know of him. How would they know?
There's lots of people around the world who've never heard of Christianity.
He's in all people, so they do know him. They just have, for whatever reason, decided not to return to him. And if you look at Mommy Africa is a wicked place because the blacks there are very wicked people.
Mommy Africa, what are you talking about?
Well, the blacks call it Mommy Africa. They said Africa is mommy. Oh, they call Africa Mommy Africa. But I don't call it that. It's a joke. But
okay. All right. Okay.
But if you look at the people, they worship everything but God. And so they're getting what they deserve.
But what I'm saying is that no matter what happens, you claim the ultimate explanation. So bad things happen, that's the way it was supposed to be. Good things happen, that's the way it's supposed to be.
Right.
And so on. But that doesn't explain it. What's the difference between,
it's the God that you serve.
Between, say, Hitler and the innocent person in Papua New Guinea who never heard of Jesus because they've never encountered a Westerner. There are those people. That's why Christian missionaries go out on missions, because there's people that have never heard of Jesus. So you're telling me that when they die, if they've never been contacted by missionaries, say, what's the explanation for their deaths and misery and suffering?
I don't know. So I wouldn't. You said this priest wrote the book, Good People Die or something?
Yeah, the book is called, the priest is making an assumption. No, it's a rabbi.
The rabbi is making an assumption because he doesn't know these people. He doesn't know their circumstances. He doesn't know their hearts. And so he doesn't know that they're not getting what they deserve. He's making an assumption.
But why? What's this? You get what you deserve. For some reason, a 3-year-old who dies of a brain tumor, how are they supposed to know right and wrong? The kid can barely speak. They can barely walk. They're just children, tiny children. Why should they suffer and die? What did they do to deserve that? They couldn't have done anything.
That's why you have to, they may be suffering the sins of their parents. But that's why you have to leave it as a don't know. That's such an
immoral idea. I mean, that's a horrible idea.
No.
The sins of the father are...
But why lie to yourself and blame it on God? You don't know.
The child has to pay for the sins of the father? That is so anti-justice and unfair.
But that's based on what you think in your fallen state.
No. Okay, good. I'll take it. Because you wouldn't want a judicial system that does that. If your father, you know, robbed a bank and then he died, and they go, well, somebody's got to pay for this. So it's you, Jesse, you have to go to prison. And you're like, I didn't do anything. I'm a good man. I'm a Christian.
But
I'm a preacher.
I want to move on because of time. And there's but there's a difference between the justice system, the physical justice system, and the spirit of God within you. You can't compare the two.
Well, I think there should be some overlap. That is to say, I want our state criminal justice system to be fair, that all people, black and white, and different religions and
but it
and
cannot
women,
be because
be
you have for the most part, except for the Great White Hope, you have evil people running the system now. There's no, they have no love, and so it's impossible for them to be fair.
Well, in the criminal justice system,
yes.
Mean? What about when Republicans run it?
Republicans have no love. The rightos have no love. They're just like the Democrats. It's about themselves and not about others.
Well, but there, but so many people, and let's take someone like Senator Ted Cruz from Texas.
Let's not do that.
He's deeply religious.
Oh yeah, right.
Jackson, you don't like Ted Cruz? He's your man. Okay, I thought you were a Republican.
I am.
Okay,
I'm like 100% Republican, but I wouldn't trust
Marco Rubio as far as I can throw him. Oh, really?
Yeah.
What about okay? Well, let me back up.
He's a righto.
I'm curious to know how a religious person like yourself, a Christian, could vote for Trump, who's like the least religious president we've ever had.
He is the most religious.
What about the Hollywood Access tape and the paying off of the mistresses on his third wife? All this, if that was Obama who had that background, you would be screaming into the mic, "Get rid of this guy! He's immoral." And yet,
exactly.
When your guy does it, how do you rationalize that behavior?
Because we all have sin, and then some overcome and some don't. If you notice, since the president has been in the White House, he hasn't done those things. And we all have sin, so we have a past. Some people overcome and some don't. This president is not doing those things now. Why would I judge him for the things he's done when they don't exist anymore?
But isn't the real answer is that he's going to get you the judges you want to overturn Roe v. Wade?
No, the real answer is that he's not doing those things anymore. So why should I judge him for now?
Okay, for things
that he's not doing.
I'm just telling you, I was surprised.
I have no right to hold that against him. It happened then, and it's not happening now.
I'm just saying, I'm surprised that Christians like Ted Cruz or Marco Rubio say, you know, didn't get the nod over Trump
because they're rightos. They're weak.
They're weak. Or rhino.
They're beta males.
Republican in name only, rhino.
That's right.
Yeah. All right.
So I got to ask you this. Since you don't believe in God, where do you get your morals from?
Same place you do, from our internal nature, that we have we're born with a sense of right and wrong, and we understand that there is good and evil. This research by people like Paul Bloom at Yale University with little children, they have a sense of right and wrong. Clever experiments on this. So we're born with this sense, and then our culture tweaks it one way or the other. So, you know, we're born into, say, late 20th century, the second half of the 20th century, we've inculcated certain values. Now, a couple examples. For example, before 1967, interracial marriage was illegal. As you know, the Loving Supreme Court case overturned that. Before that, most Americans were against interracial marriage. Polls show consistently all the way up until the mid-1960s that more than 50% of Americans thought it was immoral and should be illegal for blacks and whites to marry. Nobody thinks that now.
They think it, they're just not saying it.
Well, hopefully they don't.
There
far
are black
fewer
people,
actually think
there
it.
Are white, most black people and most white people think it. Whites are afraid to say it for fear of being called racist.
Well, what do
and,
you think?
And blacks say it. I can get away with it.
But most polls show, even anonymous polls, where no one's going to know what your answer is.
Most polls show, black
African-Americans too, support, not that they support, they don't even think it's an issue anymore. Of course it's okay for blacks and whites to. Same thing with gay marriage. I mean, look how quickly that changed.
Is gay marriage a normal thing to you? Is that normal for two men or two women to so-called get married? That's normal.
Okay, I don't know what you mean by normal.
Is it normal? Everyone has the same right. Do you know the difference between abnormal and normal?
Okay, so the vast majority of people are heterosexual. There's a small percentage, maybe 3%, 5%, 7%, you know, the numbers vary, are born gay. That's just the way they are by their nature. They never chose to become gay. They always felt that way. All the research supports that. Now let me back up 1 second. You're not against interracial marriage, or are you?
I'm neither against it or for it. I understand why people do it, and so I'm not against it or for it.
Well, they fall in love. That's a good thing.
Well, no, they don't fall in love.
Because you're a big proponent of marriage and family. So if a black and white fall in love and have a family, what's wrong with that?
Well, I'm neither for, as I said, I'm neither for it or against it. And because of time, I can't get into the whole thing about why, because I have so much to ask you.
I love that
you're asking me that. So that's why I'm telling you, I'm not for it or against it. Okay. I know why things happen. And people tend to do abnormal things when they're in a fallen state. If white people and black people were not in a fallen state, they would never get married. They wouldn't hate each other. They wouldn't discriminate like that, but they would not get married. They're only doing it because they're in a fallen state.
They're trying to get away
from the person that traumatized them.
Where is it in the Bible that says blacks and whites should, or races should not mix?
Well, I don't know if it's in the Bible or not. I'm just telling you why they do it, and I'm not even against it.
But you just said you don't know what's in the heart of other people, people you don't even know. You don't want to judge them. But you're right now judging, say, a couple that fall in love, that there's something wrong with that, or that, you know, two gay people fall in love and want to be married. I mean, here you are, a big pro-marriage guy, and a couple comes to you and says, hey, we got married. Aren't you going to go, good, marriage is good?
Yeah, I would say congratulations, because as I said, I'm neither for it or against it.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
That's a start.
So I got to ask you this.
Yeah.
In this talk I saw last night on your video, speaking at some university, and you were talking about the difference between religion and government.
Yeah.
And you said that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you said that government set up rules to control you. And likewise, religion set up as rules to control you.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a very interesting concept. I had never heard anyone say that before. Why do you say, I know that governments create laws in the attempt to control you, but why do you say religion create laws to control you?
Yeah, that particular lecture comes from one of my earlier books, in which I say that around the time that human groups started to coalesce into larger and larger city states and then nation states and so on, you know, once you get populations above several hundred, you know, you need a set of rules for people to get along with one another. The reason for that is because we have a dual nature. We have inner demons and we have better angels. So we need rules and norms and customs and guidelines and ultimately laws that are enforced either by government. You know, the state hands everybody a copy, or you're in a city with 1,000 people and everybody gets a copy of the rules and so on. And in a democracy, we vote on those rules or whatever. But what religion does that even more, in the sense that God is sort of the eye in the sky. So even if you think you got away with it because no one saw you, or there were no surveillance cameras or whatever, there is an eye in the sky. God knows, and you will ultimately be judged in the end. I'm arguing that these were both invented ideas to get people to be more cooperative, more pro-social, follow the rules, quit being a free rider, a cheater, a bully, a criminal, whatever. We have to have some kind of justice system and a set of rules, or else, you know, there's chaos. And but, so it was religion and government that arose around the same time.
But you said within us there's evil and good angels, or something you just said?
Yeah, better angels and inner demons. Yeah.
And so
I mean this metaphorically. I know you might take it literally. I mean metaphorically. We have a dark side. I mean, we have a sense of, you know, selfishness, and I want what's best for me and my family. But I know that you want what's best for you and your family. So I need to honor you and respect you and give you the freedom to pursue your self-interest, if I want you to give me the freedom to pursue my self-interest, as long as we don't harm each other. And that's the basis of a civil society.
Would those better angels be considered as good?
As good as what?
You said there are demons in us and they're better angels, right?
Yeah, I'd say it's pretty close, right? So the whole point of
angels good?
Yeah, they're good, yeah.
And does that mean that they are of God?
No, I claim we're born with them.
We're born with better angels?
Yeah, we're born with them. Yeah, we're born with a sense of right and wrong. And sometimes we, as you would say in your language, we sin. That is, we fall away from the ideal standards of what's the right thing to do. Most of us know what the right thing to do is. Most of the time, most people are good. But the amount of crime or harm that happens and so on is high enough that we need some kind of justice system to encourage people to do the right thing and discourage them from doing the wrong thing. Now, you would say this is as a result of our fallen nature, but I don't see it as a bug in the system you know, you fell, that it's a feature. It's, we're just born with this tendency to, let's say, cultivate a reputation for being tough. And if you take advantage of me, you bully me, I'm going to fight back. Okay.
But I got to ask you this.
Much of violence is moralistic in nature. You know, when you look at police blotters for, you know, why people, you know, kill each other, for example, homicides, you know, about 90% of homicides are moralistic in nature. You know, the guy did it because, you know, you slept with my girlfriend, you insulted me at the bar, you stole my parking spot. You know, this is the kinds of reasons people give for why they commit violence. It's moralistic in nature, not instrumental. In other words, I knock off the liquor store to get cash, or I knock off the jewelry store to get some free Rolexes as a criminal. That's actually much rarer than the other examples I just gave.
But who created you in a sense that you have two identities inside? You have the good angels, as you said, and the evil. Who did that?
Well, nature. You know,
what do you mean, nature?
Our evolutionary nature is such that we have these competing motives, this competition between what's best for me and what's best for my group. And so it is amazing. No, and I wrote a whole book about this.
Would you consider yourself an intellectual?
Here's my book on that, The Science of Good and Evil.
Oh, okay. Would you consider yourself intellectual?
I'm a professor, so I guess so. Yes, and I write books and so on. Yeah, but I guess so. But
isn't that a problem?
These are just ideas. It doesn't matter if you're intellectual or not. Anyway,
if you notice, intellectual people tend not to have wisdom. They don't have that love.
What?
They don't see where the they don't see who created the intellect.
You have to be non-intellectual to understand love and these kinds of things. Come on.
Don't ask me. I want you to respond to that in a minute, but I got to go back to something you said.
Okay.
Is so-called same-sex marriage, that normal or abnormal?
This is a black and white thing. Think of it as a spectrum, a continuum. Right. So when you're it's neither good nor bad any more than
I didn't ask about good or bad. I asked if it's normal or abnormal.
If you mean statistically, it's abnormal. If you just talk in statistics.
But what do you personally believe?
But you're asking me to make a moral judgment or a statistical assessment?
No, I'm asking
assessment.
You, what do you personally believe that so-called same-sex marriage is normal or abnormal?
Neither one. It's just the way people are born.
Do you believe there is a norm and an abnorm?
Again, statistically, you're asking me ethically, right?
No, I'm just asking you your personal belief.
Yeah.
Do you believe personally, within your own heart, do you believe same-sex marriage is normal or abnormal?
I would say neither. I would say if
there has to be one.
No, it doesn't. Because you're asking me normal or abnormal, not in a statistical sense, because in a statistical sense, I would say it's abnormal, of course, because it's a smaller number.
Is there a norm and an abnorm?
No, I would not. Ethically, I would not say so.
Right and a wrong?
Okay, I'll answer your question. Here's what I think about same-sex marriage. All people should be granted the same rights under our Constitution.
But that's not what I ask.
Regardless of your skin color, who you like to sleep with, which bits you have, it doesn't matter. You're a citizen of the United States. You're protected by the U.S. Constitution, period. But you don't get to have
extra. I didn't ask
extra,
that, though. That's a standard answer.
But ethically, here's what
doctor,
I think. In my heart, okay, you asked me what's in my heart.
No, I'm
in
asking heart, you is same-sex marriage, personally, to you, if same-sex marriage is a norm or an abnorm?
It's normal.
It's normal. And what makes it normal?
Because if two people are in love with each other and they're not hurting anybody, then why not? And same thing with heterosexual
marriages.
What
is love?
If two people that are in love, but they fall out of love and, you know, they get divorced, they're straight, say straight couple, or the guy is abusive and he commits violence against his spouse, that's wrong. I would say that's abnormal.
But in
other words, straight couples could be just as abnormal.
Are you saying that you're saying that so-called gay couples have the same love, the same kind of love
of course,
that,
absolutely.
That straight couples have?
Absolutely.
So what is love?
Okay, love is a deep sense of commitment and binding to another person, as you know, for life or for your life, for your, and you know, the willingness to sacrifice yourself for that person. You know, it's very much a subjective feeling, but and as far as I know and can tell, because I don't know what's in other people's hearts. And as you said, you don't want to judge people you never met, but every gay couple I know that's together and in love, they're married or not, whatever, you know, they look to be the same as me. And I don't presume to judge them. And I don't think my marriage to a woman is any different than, I know several gay couples, their marriage seems just as good as mine. They seem just as much in love. They, you know, they're just as good and normal.
When you see two men or two women together call themselves married, you think it's the same as you and your wife being married?
Absolutely, 100%. Amazing. Totally. Yeah. How could you say amazing?
That is amazing.
But how do you know what's in their heart? You said you don't want to judge other people you don't know. So when you see
a
straight couple.
I'm not judging them at all. I just think that's amazing that you would make that statement.
What,
I got to ask you this.
But why? Why is that amazing?
I don't know. It's just amazing.
I'll give you two examples. So my wife is from Germany. She's a ballet dancer, and she has a couple that is her dance partner for dancing is a gay guy, and he's married. And we know the two of them for years. They're just as deeply in love as my wife and I are, and they're good people. And, you know, they own a home together. You know, they love each other. They travel, you know, just like any couple. Why would I want to judge them or even in any way think that's not normal? I mean, that's just so crazy.
That's amazing.
Just that's so unchristian-like. You know, what would Jesus do? Jesus would accept these people. And by the way, I should point out, too, since you're Republican, I should point out, you know,
why
Jesus.
Why do you believe that Jesus would accept these people as they are when you don't believe there is?
That's part of his philosophy. You know, the pioneering, I can't believe I'm defending Jesus on a radio show as an atheist. But, you know, as a sort of innovative ethical leader of his time, he was very non-judgmental. You know, let ye who has, you know, not sinned cast the first stone. Take the stick in your eye out of your, you know. This was Jesus, you know, the prostitute, right? You know, and who's going to kill her who has not sinned? Okay, this is his whole point. We have to love each other and accept one another for the way we are.
Are you saying that because I'm disagreeing that I hate them, I'm judging them?
I don't know what's going in your heart.
Oh, okay.
But the fact that you're saying that you think it's amazing for someone to say, that I accept other people. Why would that be amazing?
No, I don't think it's amazing that you accept other people. I say it's amazing that you say two men or two women being married is the same as you and your wife being married. To me, that's amazing.
You
have to get up early in the morning to convince yourself of that.
What's wrong with that? Give me a counter argument. What's the problem?
I can't do it because it's a norm and an abnormal. That's abnormal. I can tell you that.
Why is it abnormal?
I'm gonna have to have you back if you keep stopping.
But what do you care if two people are in love, the consenting adults, they live in another state? What do you care?
I care about it enough to be honest with them without hating them, so that hopefully I can point the right way for them to overcome.
Yeah,
that.
But why is that not the right way?
No, come on.
What do you mean, come on? Tell me what's wrong about that. See, this is an example of how religion poisons
your thinking. I didn't say it was wrong.
Thinking.
I said it's not normal.
But even that, you're judging somebody you don't even know.
So you said that Jesus would not have judged, right?
In my opinion, Jesus would have been totally accepting.
So when he called the Pharisees liars and bag of bones and...
Yeah, that's for what they were doing,
Satan,
not who they are.
Satan is their daddy.
Yeah, no. Jesus did not judge people for who they are.
He
judged people
daddy.
By what they did. No. I know this story pretty well. You know, Jesus was very judgmental of people's bad behavior, but not who they are. Right?
Well,
what's bad about being gay? Two people in love get married. What's the harm? It doesn't hurt society. It doesn't hurt you personally. What do you care?
And what is a man?
I don't know what you're asking.
What is
you
a
mean,
man?
You mean a human being with X, Y chromosomes?
Except for the physical body parts.
And a couple of bits between the legs and and high testosterone. Yeah, that's a man, yeah.
Except for the body parts. What is a man?
I'm not sure I could answer the question.
Okay. Do you love white people?
Okay, I don't even think of people as black or white, and I'm going to love these and not love those others. I think it's a antiquated, religiously based question that was shelved centuries ago. Even by most Christians would not. I think most Christians would find that question kind of offensive. Really,
how about you? Do you love white people?
I think you just asked me that. No, I don't love or hate anybody based on their skin color.
How about white people?
Again, if a white person is a good person, you know, okay, good. And if they're a bad person, I will condemn them.
Do you love white people?
No, I don't love or hate anybody based on any skin color. Again, you're asking the wrong question. You're asking a bizarre question. You know, how would you answer that question?
I would say, yeah. If you asked me, Trump, Jesse, right? Do you love white people? I would say yes.
How about black people?
Yes.
Okay. Well, me too. I love everybody.
But I just asked about white people.
Well, yeah. Okay. Then the answer is yes. but the real answer is all people, but not love.
The question wasn't about all people.
Let's put it this way. It's not that I love my neighbors. It's just that I respect them and that they should be treated equally under the law. They should be treated equally socially by me and everybody else, because that's how I would want to be treated.
How about white people?
Isn't that the golden rule?
Well, let me ask you this way. How do you feel about the fact that white, especially straight white men and women, especially straight white men, are under attack? They're the most hated species on this side of heaven. And
dude, white guys are still in the vast majority of political position. I know where you're going with
it. Let me finish the question.
Yeah, okay.
White people created the greatest country on this side of heaven, America, and they invited others in, the people of color in. And the people of color coming
Wait,
from
invited?
These—
Wait, invited?
Well, some broke in. You're right. They come here illegally. I agree with that.
Okay. Oh, boy. Slavery is an invitation. Come on in. We'll give you free chains.
And now they have turned their backs on the very people that allowed them into their free country. White people are being destroyed. They're being attacked. They're being falsely accused of racism. They're called slavery and all that mess. How do you feel about this attack upon— is it right for this attack to be happening to white people?
Okay, I dispute the premises, both your premises. First of all, black people were not invited to America. They were brought here against their will.
By who? Who brought them here?
Slave owners.
Who were the slave owners?
Okay, the slave traders, both British and American.
No,
this.
You got it wrong.
Please, go ahead.
They were sold by the blacks to the Arabs, and the Arabs sold them around the country, around the world.
Okay, that's pre slave trade to America. That's true, but what you say.
Yeah, they were sold all around the world by the Arabs.
But blacks were primarily brought to America in the slave trade of, say, 16th, 17th century.
But they
primarily
were sold, though. By the blacks.
Well, sometimes yes, but sometimes no. But they certainly were not brought— they were certainly brought here against their will. You know how we know that? Because they had to be chained and beaten to get here. If you want
to
come here, you take a boat to get here because you can't wait to get to this great country. But
does it bother you that
if you're wrapped in chains, dude? I can't believe that I have to make this argument.
Does it bother you that in Africa the upper blacks were selling with you? Black people.
Yes, of course that bothers me. That's also wrong.
As money to bargain with.
Yes, of course that's wrong.
Oh.
Now,
but
your second premise.
Why don't
I
hear the people talking about that?
I don't think whites collectively are under attack in America. You know, we've never had it so good.
What?
Yeah, totally.
Are you living in America right now?
I'm in Southern California.
Are you white?
Let me see. Yeah, looks like it. I don't feel under attack, dude. Really, seriously.
Well, that's because you hiding away your privacy of your home, away from them.
I mean, again, I told you, I spent a quarter century in Altadena, a racially mixed neighborhood. Really, no difference between whites and blacks.
Amazing.
Everybody integrates nicely. You know, we're all human. That's the deeper
and in a
point.
Fallen state, right?
No, there's no fallen state because your premise that, you know, God created us.
I got to ask you this because you're so interesting. And will you come back again?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. I got, in case I don't get to everything, I got to ask you this. When you do the things that you don't want to do, you wouldn't ordinarily do, what causes you to do that, those things at times? You wish you had not done it. You say you would never do it again. And you end up doing the same thing over again. You're like, why am I doing this? What is wrong with me? I said I wasn't going to do this again. But you end up doing it again. What causes you to do that?
It's just our competing motives inside for what we want and what we can actually have, either legally or ethically. And we all know what the difference is, but it has to do with the level of willpower or self-control that you have. I mean, anything as simple as, say, like eating chocolate ice cream when you're a little overweight and you're trying to lose weight, that would be no different than, say, having an affair on your spouse or, you know, robbing a liquor store or something like that. I'm going up from super simple to more serious issues. But the problem is all the same inside, is that you have these competing motives. You know, I'd really like to have ice cream every night. But, you know, but the long term.
I'm talking about the real bad things that you've done.
Well, okay.
And do it time, and you can't believe you did it.
Yeah.
And you end up doing it again. What causes you to do things?
The failure of will.
That would bring harm to you.
Failure of will.
You have a will?
Short-term thinking versus long-term thinking. Yes, of course I have a will.
Do you have a free will?
Yes, I believe we have free will, yeah.
How about you? Do you have a free will?
Yeah, me, absolutely, yeah, I do.
And so why don't you will yourself to always do the things that are good?
Well, because I'm not perfect at doing those kinds of
long-term. And if you have a will, why don't you will yourself to be perfect?
Sometimes I do, but, you know, no one's
perfect. But why not all the time?
Because we're not perfect.
But you have a free will.
Yeah.
But why not will yourself to be perfect?
I usually do, but I don't always make it.
Is it possible that there's something that's made a home in you and it causes you, influences you to do the things you wouldn't ordinarily do?
Well, that implies there's a little man inside me, a little mini me in there that's running the show, which would take volition and moral responsibility away from me and put it on the little man in there. That's what you're implying, is that there's somebody else in there pulling the levers.
But that's not what I ask. I ask, is it possible that you could have something that's made a home in you and it causes you to do it?
Say that again, made a home?
Within you, and it causes you to do the things that you wouldn't ordinarily do.
No, because you're saying that in kind of a dualistic way, like there's a soul and then there's me. It's all just me. There's no other thing in there.
So is it possible
there's no ghost in the machine in there.
So you will make your own self do things that you will regret later.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. In this way, because we have different neural networks in the brain operating sometimes in unison, sometimes competitively. So there is, say, the side of me that is very much motivated to have a nice, healthy body that's lean and muscular. So I work out every day. But then there's another part of me that goes, you know, I really like chocolate chip cookies and I'd really love to have one every night. And then the other part of me is like, no, Shermer, don't have that chocolate chip cookie, because you know in a couple of days you're going to notice it around your waist. Yeah, but I really want that chocolate chip cookie. So here I'm talking about this sort of competing motives inside of us in the same person.
But, oh, I got to ask you this, and then I got to throw you on the hot seat. And I need some real fast questions answered. Do you create your own thoughts?
Yes.
How do you create them?
Yeah, I don't know.
But how do you know you create them then?
Well, where else are they going to come from?
How do you know you create them and you can't tell me how you do it?
Well, there's things that we don't have full explanations for.
How do you
create and so on, and yet we still function in the world. The thoughts come from where I know not, and that's okay.
So if they come from where you know not, how are you the creator?
Well, who else would be the creator?
But how are you the creator if they come from where you know not? You said, yes, you are the creator of your own thought. You should be able to tell me how you create them. But
now you say
they come from where you know not. That means that you're not the creator,
right? Yes, that's
right.
Yeah, okay. But what I'm talking about is the brain. So I'm a materialist. I think there is no mind. There's just brain. There's no soul. There's just body.
So you believe your brains.
Yeah, the brain does it. Yeah,
creating your thoughts.
That's right. Exactly.
So then you're not creating them. Then your brain.
Well, I am my brain.
You are your brain.
They're the same.
That's amazing.
You like that word. You keep using that word. I don't think that word means what you think it means.
It's amazing.
Where do you think thoughts come from?
From your father, the devil.
All your thoughts, your thoughts?
When you all think thoughts of- are from the devil. That's why we should bring them into captivity and not believe. We should doubt everyone, and we should live by the voiceless voice which come from the soul of the belly and not by the thoughts that come from your daddy, Satan, because he only builds you up to let you down. He let you down to build you up, and now you're confused and messing up your life.
That's amazing.
Oh, amazing.
That's an amazing idea.
It's time for me to heat up this interview and throw my guest on the hot seat. So what I need is for you to answer these questions as quickly as possible.
The hot seat.
I just ask you this, but do human beings have a free will?
Yes.
Do you love the great white hope?
You mean Trump?
Yes.
No.
Is abortion morally wrong?
Personally, yes.
But I'm
pro-choice because there's competing moral rights there between the fetus and the woman. So I err on the side of the woman for other people because I don't want to tell other people what they should do with their bodies.
Amazing.
For me personally, I wouldn't do it.
Is Islam a religion of peace?
It can be. It often isn't.
Is Islam a religion of peace?
I just answer that.
No, you.
I would say the same thing for Christianity. It is now, but it didn't used to be.
Is Islam a religion of peace?
Well, I guess it's the third time you asked me that.
Right, but you said it can be.
Yes,
I ask you, is it?
Yeah, I would say at the core, no, but most Muslims are good people and peaceful people. The vast majority are not terrorists or bad people,
Islam a religion of peace?
Yeah, I answered that.
What did you say?
I said most Muslims are
That's
good
not
people.
The question.
And,
you
and
have
they're
a degree.
Peaceful people. You're talking about what the Quran says.
Is Islam a religion of peace?
Yeah, sure. I would say yes.
Are you an beta male or an alpha male?
I'm an alpha male.
If heaven exists, will you go there when you die?
I think so.
You think you're going to heaven?
Yes.
Interesting.
Amazing.
Amazing. What rights are American women missing?
They have most rights now. I think we've had enough moral progress that most women can do pretty much anything they want in America, particularly compared to other countries around the world.
Are you the head of your wife?
No.
Is your wife the head of you?
No.
A 5G?
There's no head. It's a joint system.
You're just
We're
all
married.
Tail.
It's a partnership. We're married. There's no hierarchy.
But
this
I thought
not
you
the military.
Said you were an alpha male.
I am.
Well, why are you not the head of your wife?
Because I'm not the head of anybody. She's her own person.
Don't tell her.
Don't tell your wife. Are you married?
The last thing a woman wants is a man that's not the head of her.
that's such a religious, barbaric idea.
A 5G cell phone tower's dangerous.
No.
Is Joe Biden mentally fit to run for president?
Yes.
Should white people make more babies?
I don't care.
Should white people make more babies?
No.
White History Month in July, and this is our third year coming up this July.
Will you celebrate
White History Month with us this year?
I celebrate every month for all races.
How about White History Month?
No, I don't even celebrate Black History Month. I don't celebrate any race month.
Will you celebrate White History Month?
No.
Thank you for that. That was amazing. Tell the people how they can listen to you, read your books, and get all your materials.
Skeptic.com and MichaelShermer.com. And, of course, Amazon has my books.
Did you have fun?
Yes.
Dr. Shermer?
Yeah, I rather enjoyed you, Jesse. I have to say this was one of the more unusual conversations I've had.
I would love to have you back because I would like to talk about the intellectuals. I know whether they're preachers.
The intellectuals, yes. We're a race of people.
Whether they're preachers who have gone to school to learn to be a preachers or the academias in the secular world. I want to have a conversation with you about that. I realize something about
that. Right. We'll do that. Yeah, we'll do that.
Thank you so much for coming on. I absolutely appreciate it.
Okay, send me the link when you post it, and we'll spread it around. I'll have my fans watch this. They're going to find this rather amusing, I have to say. I should say they're going to find it very amazing.
Amazing!
All right, Jesse.
Thank you all for tuning in,
folks. Bye-bye.
Thank you, bud. Thank you so much.
Isolated. Okay, bye-bye.
All right, thank you for tuning in. Let me hear from you. Don't forget to like, follow, subscribe, share. We have the merch online and all of that. And I really do appreciate you. Thank you so much. See you next time.
Next time on The Fallen State.
How have you been? You've been through a lot.
They seem to be leaving me alone, but that doesn't mean that I'm not still a target. Censor.tv just lost their Twitter account last week. And then yesterday, a fan page on Reddit was shut down. And you can't privately DM my URL to someone else.
What is it about you that they want you out of the way?
Well, I'm charming and funny, and they saw me start Vice. They saw me invent hipsters. They saw me gentrify Williamsburg. They saw me create the Proud Boys. They saw that become a global phenomenon. They go, this guy has influence. That might pull people away from the left and towards Trump.
What can the president do to stop censorship?
He can say, look, if you're going to be a totally free market enterprise, then you can't be treated like you're some sort of utility. And by the way, pardon the two Proud Boys that are in prison for 4 years for a fight with Antifa. Get fired, get in trouble, be brave, and never stop fighting.
Thanks for watching The Fallen State. We need your continued support. Donate to my nonprofit here. Subscribe and like the videos here. And tell everybody and their mama about the show.